Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
And good afternoon and welcome. You're in the Red Zone at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you here on a Wednesday as the training camp in St. Joe continues to trudge along. The players now a couple of weeks of wear and tear on their bodies and now looking ahead to the first game Friday, the Chiefs and Atlanta Falcons down in Atlanta. First preseason action, first chance to get to first opportunity to evaluate the team against another colored jersey, another team trying to go out and win jobs and win a football game. Should be very exciting to get the team out on the field. Of course, a chance to see Tony Gonzalez in his Atlanta Falcons uniform. Certainly there'll be a lot of handshakes before the game between Tony Gonzalez and some of his former teammates. The Chiefs and Falcons on Friday, our first real football out on the field. A couple of weeks of practice, and I'm sure the guys ready to get after it. We're going to talk to Kendall Gammon coming up here in a couple of minutes, sideline reporter for the Kansas City Chiefs on 101 The Fox. Does a great job, and of course, former Pro Bowl snapper himself. Pro Bowl long snapper Kendall Gammon joins us here in a little bit. Also, we'll talk to Tim Castillo, Chiefs fullback, a guy who definitely made an impact on the offense last year and is running first team according to the depth chart that was released with the press release that came out for the Chiefs and Falcons game. Now, that being said, let's talk about the depth chart, but let's understand what we've heard from the coaching staff. Todd Haley's made it very clear, do not read too much into who is practicing with what team. First teamers, the first group, he likes to call it. It's not the first team, it's the first group. That players are being moved around, moved up and down from the first group to the second group to the third group to enable them to get matchups, to compete against different players on the other side of the ball so that they can see them match up. In other words, I think probably you'll see some second-teamers moved up to first team to compete against first-team defense and vice versa, move them around to see get on tape. In other words, you move up a second-string defensive lineman to get him on tape against Brian Waters. Let's see how he competes with Brian Waters so that we understand what he's going to do. He may dominate a second-team guy, a guy that really, in the back of the coach's mind, they don't think is going to make the team. But how does he do against a guy, Brian Waters, who's one of the better guards in the NFL? Let's find out if this guy is for real. That's what they're talking about when they discuss matchups with certain players in the first and second team. Now, all that being said, that you can't read too much into the depth chart. Let's do exactly that. Let's read into the depth chart and let's at least point out some of the things that are of note for this football team. I think the first thing is we'll start with the wide receivers. Jeremy Urban and Dexter McCluster are your second team wide receivers. I don't think that shocks anyone, but it confirms the expectations. When Jeremy Urban was signed, a lot of people thought third wide receiver. When Dexter McCluster was drafted, a lot of people thought slot receiver, third wide receiver. Which one is the third? Well, probably there really isn't a third in the NFL. It depends upon what kind of matchups you've got. If you want the bigger wide receiver, Jeremy Urban would be the third guy in. If you want the quicker wide receiver, Dexter McCluster would be the third guy in. Those two players, pretty much where we thought they would be as far as the depth chart would go. Next piece that I think is of note on this is along the offensive line. It's what you expected. The four returning starters with Ryan Lilja at guard. But what I think is of note is Barry Richardson playing at left tackle. Mitch Holtus told us last week Barry Richardson playing very well and playing at left tackle. And I think that's of note. The fact that he's at left tackle and Colin Brown means Barry Richardson, if they would keep only one extra tackle, probably leads in that battle. You need a guy that can step in and play the left side if your left tackle goes down. The fact that Richardson is working over there, you figure it's easier to move a left tackle to the right, means I would put Richardson ahead of Colin Brown for the third tackle spot. They may keep four, they may keep five. Ndukwe, another guy, Ike Ndukwe, he is listed as the backup left guard, but he is a guy that has guard and tackle potential. He can play right tackle, he can play guard, so there's some flexibility with him as far as the roster goes. And John Asamoah, the rookie, listed as the backup right guard. That's interesting to note, I believe, because in the back of your mind, you think about John Asamoah eventually being the starting right guard. You got to figure either later this year, next year, the year after, they'd like to see John Asamoah work his way into the starting lineup, whether that's Ryan Lilja being pushed out or that's Ryan Lilja being pushed over to the left guard and the contract and the age of Brian Waters being pushed out on the left side. Asamoah working on the right side would seem, and listed as a right guard, would seem to be the guy that projects out to be the right guard eventually. But right now, taking snaps at both right and left guard, he could probably play either way. It gives you an idea maybe how the roster will shake down as far as the offensive line goes. The biggest note on offense, Thomas Jones listed as the starter, Jamal Charles listed as the backup. Is this just motivation for Jamal Charles? Is it a tip of the cap to the veteran Thomas Jones, or is Thomas Jones winning the starting running back spot? Time will tell. Keaston Moore listed as the third running back, ahead of Jackie Battle as the fourth, and Javaris Williams, last year's seventh-round pick, as the fifth running back. So the running backs probably not in the order that a lot of people would have expected. The quarterbacks are right where you'd expect it. One other note, Tim Castile, who we'll talk to a little bit later on, is listed as the first-team fullback. Mike Cox listed as the second-team fullback. Defensively, D-line, what you would expect as far as the starters, Jackson Edwards and Dorsey. One thing of note, Sean Smith, many people expected to be the backup nose tackle. He's actually listed as the number two left defensive end behind Tyson Jackson, with Derek Lokey from Texas listed as the backup nose tackle. Derek Lokey, a guy that Todd Haley went out of his way to comment about how hard he works in the weight room. That work apparently paying off, as he is now listed as the second nose tackle behind Ron Edwards. It'll be interesting to watch the defensive line rotation down in Atlanta, see who gets on the field and in what combinations. Wallace Gilberry, the backup at right defensive end to Glenn Dorsey, and Wallace second on the team in sacks last year. I don't think that's a shock. But with Sean Smith, the left defensive end, means Alex McGee is third team, last year's third-round pick, listed as third team along the defensive line at left defensive end. The linebackers, Mike Vrabel, Corey Mays, DeMario Williams, Tamba Hali, the same as last year. That puts Jovan Belcher and Derek Johnson as the backups at middle linebacker. I don't think that's a major surprise, but I do think it's of note that they have not overtaken, at least in the eyes of the coaching staff. Todd Haley did say this past week that Derek Johnson and DeMario Williams, one of the best battles in camp. So you can expect that to be at least right now a close race, but the nod still to last year's starters at the linebackers. Andy Studebaker backing up Mike Vrabel, and Cameron Sheffield, the rookie fifth rounder, is at the second team left, right outside linebacker behind Tamba Hali. Corners, Flowers and Carr, even with some of Carr's problems, he is still listed as the starter. Javier Arenas behind him, he's had some problems as well. The starters, Eric Berry at safety and John McGraw at free safety. Berry at the strong safety, McGraw at the free safety. Eric Berry, the only rookie on the first team. However, the other six rookie draft picks are all second team, so they're all doing very well. None of them buried on the depth chart, in fact, in front of a number of the 2009 draft picks. Behind them are Rashard Langford and Kendrick Lewis. Kendrick Lewis running second team at free safety behind John McGraw. DeJuan Morgan and Donald Washington, your backups. Of note, Donald Washington, a draft pick from last year, making the move from corner to safety. Those are really the highlights on the offense and defense. Then in special teams, Colquitt and Suckup handling the kicking duties. Thomas Gafford, the snapping duties. No surprise there. Dustin Colquitt, the holder. Not a surprise there either. If there is a surprise, it's that Javier Arenas is the first-team punt returner and kick returner. Dexter McCluster, the backup punt returner and kick returner, with Quentin Lawrence, third team at both those spots. Quentin Lawrence, a sixth-rounder from last year. Right now, it's Arenas in front of McCluster at both return spots. Those are really the highlights of the depth chart that's put out there. But again, we stress, the coach has gone out of his way to stress, do not read too much into who was on what team. We'll read more into it after we watch the Chiefs play the Atlanta Falcons. We'll read something into what Kendall Gammon has to say. He's coming up next here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job! And we'll win this game! And the Chiefs put the hammer down!
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime!
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you as we talk to Chiefs sideline reporter, of course, former All-Pro himself, Kendall Gammon, is with us live at Chiefs practice, as a matter of fact. Kendall, how you doing, man?
I'm doing very good. Soren, yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad. Let's talk about a couple of things here before I'll get to the depth chart, which was released to the media on the game notes for the Chiefs-Falcons game coming up here in a couple of days down in Atlanta, the first preseason game. Let's start, first of all, with the fact that that first preseason game is looming out there on Friday. Will a team, in your experience, now this could be totally different because you're clearly not playing for the club right now, is there any kind of mention of the preseason game before you actually get on the plane for this first preseason game, or do teams actually talk a little bit about finally getting a chance to hit against somebody else?
Well, yeah, there's some talk about it, and it is, you know, getting a chance to hit somebody else. Normally by this time, you know, when I played, almost without exception, we always had one scrimmage where we played another team, so that was where you talked about hitting somebody else. Now you finally get to do it because they basically went 2 weeks just beating up on each other, so now you get a chance to go and see something else, and quite honestly, get in there and see how people perform. When the bullets are flying and all of a sudden you know, that unconscious confidence has to take place where you're not able to perform and thinking about things. You've just got to go full speed and hope that what you've been repping on the practice field and, you know, probably more importantly, what you've heard from the coaches is taking place on the field.
The approach of veterans versus rookies, in other words, a veteran that knows he's got this team made, what's his mindset going into the first preseason game? Is it only about coming out healthy?
No, I don't believe so. Not if he's a true pro. If he's a true pro, he's trying to get better. He knows he's only going to get a limited number of reps. It's always in your mind that I guess, back there that you want to stay healthy because you can't stay if you don't play. But all the same, I think it's about getting better and just trying to take your game to the next level. For me, and my situation was obviously a little bit different being a long snapper and normally doing most of the snaps, through all the preseason games, but just trying to do whatever I felt I needed to do to get ready for the preseason, which was just getting in my routine and knowing how I was going to approach things. It's still, you know, this first preseason game, Soren, is different because, you know, the coaches almost treat it like a practice. I mean, they don't game plan, and they're just going to go out there and they're going to do their thing. And do they want to win? Yeah, they want to win, but not at the expense of game planning and doing things. And the first preseason game, most any team could win if they wanted to game plan and the other team wasn't game planning. I mean, to me, it's that specialized. But it's just getting out there and working on what you have to do and being able to, I guess, just adapt to the situation. And you know, for the veterans, that situation is maybe only getting 10 or 12 plays. And I guess I say that there should be a little bit of side in there of depending on whether you're a veteran who's trying to hang on and make the team or whether you're a veteran, like you said, that knows you're going to make the team. I mean, it's definitely two different mindsets.
The small school kid who's a rookie walking out, he'll see his first NFL stadium, even though it's only preseason. You were that guy at one point. What goes through your mind?
Well, I mean, you hope you get out there and the game's not too big for you. And you just got to get out there and, you know, it's cliche after cliche, give it your all and go after it. You have to fight the tendency, because I mean, you do literally hear it out there sometimes when if you're going hard in some of the, I mean, if you're a young rookie but you're high up and you're still trying to make the team and you're going against some veterans, I mean, they may look at you like you're crazy when you're going, you know, balls to the wall and just going after it, but you have to fight that complacency a little bit sometimes. And, you know, I've seen some guys that kind of get into the wrong mindset, that think they need to do what some of the other veterans are doing. I mean, even from the other team, it sounds kind of odd, but, you know, they all of a sudden get mad if you're cutting people instead of staying high on them and things like that. So, I mean, you've got to go out there. You've got to work on your game, quite honestly. You've got to figure out what it is you've got to do to get better and to make sure the coaches notice you and all that, you know, predicated with the fact of helping your team win.
There's no doubt that there's an awe factor for a young player when he first steps on that NFL practice field, but how much faster does it get even stepping up to the preseason game? And then when they get to the regular season, if they make the team, how much faster will they realize it gets when they get to a regular season game?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is a ton faster. You know, I remember looking back and when I started playing, and the bullets were flying faster and faster in camp in the preseason, but you get into that first game and now it's for real. And I mean, and every game it takes on so much importance because you only got 16 of them. And it is a fast thing. And, you know, I always joked about the fact of, you know, for me being a, besides long snapping part of things, of course, being a, you know, career scout team player and trying to help out with stuff, you know, Wednesdays and Thursdays when we were going, I mean, I could hold my own. I could do well if I was going hard. But the fact is everybody else was still hadn't reached that game speed. But my game speed, compared to theirs for the other positions, wouldn't have made it in the real game, except for what I did for a living, which was snap the ball and stuff. So, I mean, it definitely accelerates. And that's the biggest jump, you see is that. And I guess more importantly, not more importantly, but, you know, going on a tangent a little bit, but this is something that the coaches are looking at also, not only how they perform in those games, but looking at what year they are. I mean, you can understand it if you're a first-year player, and sometimes even a second-year player, and you're right there, but you really haven't fully got up to speed. But once you start to get into that end of that second year or the third year, if you're not feeling comfortable and looking like you belong, that's when they start to really, I think, critique things even more.
We're talking to Kendall Gammon, of course, chief sideline reporter, joins us here in the red zone. Kendall, the Weiss and Crennel factor, we've talked a lot about it in the offseason. I know you've seen a lot of the practices right now. Have you noticed a difference in how the players react to two guys with as much experience as they bring to the table?
Well, I'm not close enough to see individually, but I just think, you know, in going off my past experience, when you have seasoned coaches, you know, been there and done it, and done it being been to the Super Bowl and been successful multiple times, you know they know what they're talking about. To me, out on the field, I think you've seen it also, Seren. To me, practices are smoother this year than they were last, and everybody looks more at ease. They're not easing through at things, but they look more at ease. They look more comfortable with what's going on. They're working hard. But to me, you know, Coach Haley's getting around to more positions and checking things out, and I think, you know, evaluating a little bit more. And I think that's because he feels more comfortable with the O&D coordinator and certainly has that comfort level with them because of the past and the things he's done with them. So I think it is big. As a player, yeah, you look at these coaches, like I said, you know they've done it. And to me, that's some instant respect.
Does Todd Haley seem more relaxed?
I do. I think he does. I think you even see it in his press conferences and how he handles himself and everything. And but to me on the field, he seems more relaxed. Now that doesn't mean that he's not afraid to chew somebody up and down, because I think we've seen that quite a bit during camp. But I think he's been more selective of when he's done things. And I mean, I think he would admit he's learned just like everybody else. To me, he's pretty honest about that. That, you know, it was his first rodeo last year, also in terms of being a head coach, and I think he's doing a good job.
Yeah, no, and I think there's definitely, maybe relaxed isn't the right word. It makes it sound like he was uptight last year. But you hit on it, going around checking out other positions and being able to float. You know, you don't become a great play caller by being just a great play caller. And that's what he was. Obviously did a great job in coordinating the Cardinal offense. And that was what was his final springboard to getting the head coaching job here in Kansas City. But the intangibles it takes to be a great play caller is to understand the dynamics of the wide receivers competing against the D-backs, of understanding where you've got an advantage on the offensive line and where you're at a disadvantage, and putting your team with the right plays in a position to take advantage of the mismatches that work towards you. I mean, there's a clear understanding of football beyond just, okay, this is a good play when I drew it up on the chalkboard. And I say that to say, clearly, to have all that knowledge, there is something he can lend to each position. And by being freed up from not having to just watch over everything that's going on offensively, and I know last year we saw a little bit of it because through all of River Falls, Chan Gailey was there. What I saw was a guy who kind of focused in on the wide receivers because that was the position he knew, but was almost guarding himself from being around the quarterbacks and the offense as a whole because, you know, looking back on it, hindsight, there was clear that was probably the first sign of friction, that the head coach, who was clearly a bright offensive mind, was staying away from the most important position on the offensive side of the field and the overall equation, and was just kind of locking in on the wideouts. Was almost like, I know I can't blow up on this guy. I know I can't disagree with him. I've got to just stay over here. Now we're seeing him drift from position to position to position, and I think he brings that insight to all those positions. I think this will be a much stronger football team. And you can see relaxed being maybe not like he was uptight, but relaxed being a freedom to go and be a part of each part of the offensive game plan and practice session, to me, I think makes this a stronger football team. Do you agree?
No, absolutely. And, you know, I wasn't saying it in terms of just, you know, like he was uptight last year. I would say, just like anything, it's a learning, but he looks comfortable with what's going on. And I think,
right,
you know, I think you can learn a lot about guys. I mean, of course, basically everything's film that they do out there, but you can still learn a lot about people and their body language and how they hold themselves and everything, even between that. You know, some of the things that I've written in the past, I mean, a lot of guys have been in the league. You can look at how a guy holds himself. You can look into his eyes. You can see, you can feel a confidence in them. You can almost predict who's going to make a team or not. You know, maybe down to the last five or six players, because you can just, I don't know, it's that it. You can just kind of tell, and most guys that have been in the league for a while will say the same thing. You can, very early on, you can see the guys that are just there, and they're not going to make it. Even if they do have a fair amount of talent, they just don't, even if they maybe could belong, they don't feel like they do. And so I think being able to see all those different personalities of guys is just good. And I quite honestly, I think it's good, no matter what position it is, that the head coach is over there every once in a while checking things out, because it's just a little bit of reminder that the eyes are on you, and it may be a little extra motivation. I don't know what it is. I like it. I remember that type of atmosphere when I was at the Steelers and Coach Cowher. He was around everywhere. You know, he had Ron Earhart and Dom Capers, two very capable coordinators, and of course he had the old coach Dick LeBeau as well. And he never honed in on O&D except during team stuff. Otherwise, I mean, or around those coordinators, he was always hovering and checking different things out and not saying a lot, but, you know, sometimes you can say a lot, you know, without speaking. And I think it's big. I just, there's something about it. And I think we've heard it. I don't think I'm talking about anything groundbreaking. I think a lot of people have noticed that.
We're talking to Kendall Gammon here in the Red Zone. I'm going to take a break. We come back. We'll talk about the depth chart for the Kansas City Chiefs that was released, the unofficial depth chart. It came out as part of the release for the Chiefs and Falcons game. That's coming up next with Chiefs sideline reporter Kendall Gammon here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking, with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com, and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the internet.
I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365, and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at KCChiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs Cheerleader Squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at KCChiefs.com.
The off-season workouts are complete. Training camp is underway. The new Arrowhead Stadium is ready to make its Monday Night Football debut. The NFL season is near. Will you be there? Great seats are available with tickets to Chiefs games starting at just $30. Single game Chiefs tickets are on sale now at KCChiefs.com, the stadium box office, or via Ticketmaster. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium and be there when your Chiefs take on the Packers, the Eagles, AFC West rivals the Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers, or the 49ers, Cardinals, Bills, Jags, or Titans. Great seats are available for all games but won't last long and are subject to availability. Don't wait. Get your single game Chiefs tickets now at KCChiefs.com, the stadium box office, or any Ticketmaster location. The new Arrowhead, new body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. We're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you, of course, with Kendall Gammon now back with us. Sideline reporter for the Kansas City Chiefs. You hear him on 101 The Fox, part of the best broadcast in the NFL. Mitch Holthus, Lynn Dawson, and Kendall Gammon patrolling the sidelines. By the way, Kendall, are you ready to get back out on the sidelines down in Atlanta on Friday?
I am looking forward to it. It's always nice to get back down there. I always say I had the best internship ever for 15 years playing the game. I stood on the sideline, watched the game, and talked. So this is where I belong.
Yes, Kendall joining us here in the Red Zone. Let's talk about that depth chart that has been released. And they're very clear. It's unofficial, and Todd Haley has said many, many times, do not read too much into this. So we'll do exactly that. We'll now read too much into it. It gives us the first thing to chew on, and I'll point this out, and I talked about this on my radio show the other day. You know, this time last year, so keep this in mind, when we detail everything we talk about here based on the depth chart, this time last year, Bernard Pollard was listed as the first team safety, and he would end up being cut before the season started. So when they say do not read too much into these depth charts, they mean it. So we understand that, and we're not taking these as absolutes, but it just gives us a starting point to discuss. So I'll caution all our listeners with that understand there's probably some guys on the first team that aren't going to be anywhere near the first team and some guys that are listed pretty low that are going to be a lot bigger contributor than you imagine. Flip side is I don't think anybody was talking about Jovan Belcher or Andy Studebaker. Or Wallace Gilberry, all guys who made contributions, major contributions on the defensive side of the ball. So we take all of this with a grain of salt, as we've been instructed to do by the head coach. But let's start with the first one. Your thoughts on Thomas Jones being listed as the one and Jamal Charles as the two at running back. Is this just to keep Jamal working hard and not feeling like a superstar? Or do you think that they like the idea of hitting him with maybe the more physical runner in Thomas Jones and then bringing in the home run threat with Jamal Charles off the bench?
Well, I defer to the latter. I think it's, you know, Thomas Jones is, he's looked good this camp, I think, Saran, and he is a powerful runner. And quite honestly, I think there's still some talk of whether Jamal can take as much punishment as he took last year. Now, he took it and more power to him. I mean, it was impressive, but eventually that catches up with you. To me, if Jamal touched the ball 10 or 12 times a game, to me, he's a threat to go every single time, and I think Thomas can he brings something to us that I think is big in terms of off tackle 3-4 yards in a cloud of dust. And I mean, he runs hard. I believe he has a nice cutback. I mean, I've seen him a couple times run off tackle and make that outside foot cut and go vertical up the field and just do some good things. But I think you're going to see both of them in there quite a bit. So I don't read too much into it except for the fact that Thomas is a, you know, 7 or 8 year veteran. You can correct me on which one. I think it's in there, and Jamal's a little bit younger. But I think easily a lot of different times you're going to see both of them in there, to be quite honest.
You know, and I think it says the fact that he's listed in front says how serious they are about running the football. That last 8 games last year, that they plan on running the ball a lot, and whichever one of them is the one and whichever one's the two, they're both going to get a lot of usage. Like you said, this team is going to really, I think, focus on running the ball and be a tough physical team. And I think that's twofold. One, because it's a great way to open things up for your passing attack, but it also shortens the games and limits the number of snaps that your defense has to take out there. If you can continue to keep that clock grinding, I think this is a clear statement that they intend to be a very aggressive team in the run and put a lot of carries on those two backs. They've got two big guys, two talented guys. I don't want to say big as far as size, but two talented backs that can carry the load. I think that's a clear statement that they're going to run the ball. I'm interested in some of the backups along the offensive line. The starting unit is what you would expect. It's the four guys that are back from last year with Lilja at right guard. Let's talk first about the backup at left tackle, Barry Richardson. Nobody last year, I thought, changed their body more and bought into the getting in shape approach that Todd Haley wanted than Barry Richardson. He looked like a different guy last year, and I think that's carried over. He when he first came to the Chiefs, he was a right tackle only, big, huge, massive guy that you figured they just wanted to road grade. He came back. It was tough to figure out who was Brandon Albert and who was Barry Richardson, because Richardson had gotten in such good shape, and I assume that's paying some dividends because they're running him on the left side of the line of scrimmage as that backup at left tackle. That's a pretty good sign of progress with Barry Richardson, is it not?
I agree. He's I've watched him real closely, and his technique is very sound. He's done a nice job in pass protection, which is obviously, I mean, as an offensive lineman in this league, if you can pass protect, you can play. Most guys can run block, and he can run block good enough, but you've got to be able to pass protect, and he's doing a great job with his footwork, and he's worked on it, and it is definitely something you have to work on to be able to sit on the bull rush, to be able to plant on your outside foot and stop the inside rush if he happens to try to dart inside. And from the outside, you basically just have to run him around because that QB's got to step up. He's done some good things. He's listed as the backup left tackle. You know, I would assume he's, you know, the backup right tackle as well. I know they've got Colin Brown over there also, but I'm sure he's both there because I don't see him keep them both. He has done a nice job, and I think they're pleasantly surprised with things.
And all the teams you played on, what was the norm on how many offensive linemen they kept?
Well, you normally kept at least 9, sometimes 10, but maybe that 10th one is on the practice squad, but he's ready to come up there. You're normally going to suit up 8. It kind of depended, you know, for me back in my days when I was, a backup offensive lineman, you know, and a long snapper, so we'd suit up 7, and I was the 8th offensive lineman, and actually got called upon a few times, so it happens. But normally you're going to go in with 8 on game day. If you take 7, you're pressing it, but always going to have at least 9 on the roster.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because as we look at some of the other spots, you know, it kind of gives you a window. I'm with you. I think Barry Richardson looks like he's the backup at both tackles. Now, do you keep another tackle to keep another guard? Do you have to have a guy that's just center? We'll get into that in a minute. But I'm with you. Colin Brown might look like the guy who's making his way to the practice squad, but I mentioned the body types of Barry Richardson. Colin Brown's done a great job of getting himself in shape. He looks more the part that Todd Haley wants him to play this year than last year, so we'll see if that ends up being a battle. But I assume you play Richardson on the left side because you're confident he can handle the right, so let's get him snaps on the left in case he needs to be there. Let's go to the guard spot. Asamoah listed as second team at right guard, with Ndukwe listed as a second team at left guard. Asamoah, we don't think they invested a third-round pick in him to just cut him. He's huge. I think he's much bigger than the 305 he's listed at. I don't mean fat. I mean just a big, huge-frame guy. You feel like, you know, if he's at right guard, the future is him at right guard eventually, whether that's Lilja moving over to the left side and Brian Waters because of age moving on or Lilja being bumped out, that ultimately that's kind of an indicator that his future is ultimately at that right guard spot?
Well, it's at a guard spot for sure, and I think I've seen him work at left a little bit, but, yeah, they've got him listed at the right side. Asamoah, to me is impressive. He looks, I mean, you see him, Seren. He looks every bit the part of what an NFL lineman looks like. And then he's got quick feet. Those feet aren't off the ground very often, so he's never got poor leverage. What he does so well that I've seen is not only get off the ball quick, but he takes good angles. He understands the angles. He gets to the backers. And when he gets to them, he gets his hands on them and he engulfs them. And, you know, it may not be pretty all the time, but the fact is he just engulfs them. And if he gets into a backer, that backer is going to have a long day. He doesn't want any part of it. He's going to have to go backwards to get around him because he's not going to come through him. This guy, he is a Hulk. He does a good job, and he's got that high motor that you like in an offensive lineman that can really, really make a difference. So to me, he's one of the better picks we have. I mean, you know, I guess you never steal with a third round. You have to remind me, you're never a steal there, but he could definitely be a gem and somebody who mans a position for a long, long time. And you're right. I mean, you don't know what Brian's going to do after this. You don't know if somebody's going to pop over, because I believe Lilja, and I'm certain that he was a left guard in Indianapolis for a while, and he's still got some years left. And he's interesting because he doesn't look like an NFL lineman, but he is one, and he's a very good one. So it's definitely – offensive line went from being what I thought was the weakness last year to something they've done a good job with this year, and they can really make a difference.
Yeah, and I'm with you. And I think third round for offensive line, you can get some great value in the offensive line. Just look back to Will Shields as a third-round pick. And at that guard spot in particular, there's some of the most talented players in the NFL are guards that are available in those spots. And Asamoah looks like he's going to fit that. Let's go to center. I think a lot of people thought when Casey Wiegman was brought back that he would immediately be inserted as the starter and Rudy Niswanger was in trouble. I think more realistically was Casey Wiegman is he's been around a long time. He's a smart, smart football player and a tough guy, obviously. But to me, he was brought in as depth at the offensive line position. I think Rudy's going to be your starting center. And Casey, it'll come down to that's why I asked you about, do you keep 9? Do you keep 10? How many do you keep? Do you want a true center behind him? That would probably be his perfect, you know, spot is as a backup center where you're not going to ask him to play 70 snaps every game. You know, maybe he plays 2 or 3 games because your center went down over the course of the season. Well, that would seem to be a great spot for Casey Wiegman. Do you think that's how it's shaping up, that this is Rudy's job at center and Casey is there as insurance?
Well, to a degree, Seren, I don't completely share it because I think they're letting them both take some snaps at first team center. I think it's going to take care of itself in the preseason games. I think they'll both work with the first team like they've been doing. What's interesting, and I know you've thought about this, but is, you know, with Casey, he's a true center and he's played nothing else. Now, he's smart enough and he could get the job done and back up a guard if need be. More likely, if he was backing up and something happened to somebody, you might move Rudy to a guard and him come into the center position. Whereas if Casey were to win the position back and Rudy's there, Rudy's going to play in this league for a long time, whether he's a starter or whether he's a backup. Because as a starter at center, you know, then obviously you're playing. But if he's not, he can play center. We know that. He can play both guards. And quite honestly, he can play tackle. And maybe not great, but he can get you through a game and he can do some stuff. So he's got a lot of value. He's a smart guy. I guarantee you he knows every single thing that's going on out there, which, you know, Casey does as well. But that one, to me, that's probably one of the more interesting battles in camp and how that one shapes up. Because I guess just because of the backup situation and the semantics you have there with if Casey's the backup, then he's more just backing up center, where if Rudy were the backup, he can back up all three positions. And I think, do you see where I'm going with that one?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's a great point, because I know you and I and Mitch Holtis have talked about that if Rudy, you know, we've talked about it for the better part of a year, if he would ever be beaten out, he would seem to be the prototype of what you'd want as a swing offensive lineman if you wanted to try to go lean as far as the number of backup guys you carry, because we know he can play center. We know he can play guard. He did it before he took over the center job. In fact, was moving out John Wellborn a couple of years ago at the guard spot before he ended up taking over at center. And at 6'6" tall, he certainly got the size to move out and play a tackle. He would be ideal in that role. And maybe it's the kind of thing that he wins the center spot, you keep Casey, and if somebody else at either one of those guards goes down, you know, you can move him to guard or even tackle. He becomes your emergency tackle. We've seen teams that do that. You bring the center in, Casey comes in, takes over at center, and maybe Rudy moves out to right tackle. Damian Woody has made the move from center to tackle. And center's a spot for Casey Wiegman's side of it that you can play to an advanced age. I mean, we've seen guys,
right.
Mike Webster played for years and years at that spot. What's his name of the Titans? I'm drawing a blank now. Has been around forever,
going
back to the Oiler days at center. Bruce Matthews played forever with the Oilers, but even now the guy who came over from the Jets. Titans. Kevin Mawai.
Kevin Mawai, absolutely.
The center spot, you can play that for a long time. We're talking now with Kendall Gammon, Chief sideline reporter. All right, let's move to the defensive side of the ball. I mean, I think the wide receivers are pretty standard. We've got Urban and McCluster in there as the second teamers. The
right.
battle will be for that fifth wide receiver spot. The tight ends are shaping up the way you would expect them to shape up. I don't think there's any, real major news on that. Moyaki's with the second team.
Right.
I think that's, you expect him to push for that starting spot on Leonard Pope. Jake O'Connell, third team. I don't think there's anything else that's really earth-shattering or conclusions that can be drawn from the offensive side. But on the defensive side of the ball, there are some things that are interesting. And one is Sean Smith being listed at left defensive end as the second team left defensive end. The expectation was when he was signed that he would be in that mix with Ron Edwards at the nose tackle, which he still could be. What do you make of them listing Sean Smith at left defensive end?
Yeah, you know what? That's the first thing that caught my eye as well. So I really don't know what to make of that, nor the fact that he's what we thought was a nose tackle. Because who knows? Maybe that's exactly where they had him pegged to begin with. And quite honestly, he may back up both, and they just may have it set that way. But even more so is the fact that McGee's there at third team behind him. So I don't know. I don't know whether that's what they saw, whether Loki's actually doing some good things and they like him there. But, I don't think, I think Ron did a good job last year. I don't think they want him to take all the snaps. They want to keep him fresh and do some things. And the nose tackle to me in a 3-4 is perhaps the most difficult position to play, outside of quite honestly the left defensive end. But, that one's got me puzzled a little bit. I think, maybe we'll get some insight into it in the preseason game when we see where they actually play when they come in.
And we'll see how much Alex McGee gets in there, because that is noteworthy that McGee's all the way down to the third team. And I think it's also noteworthy just as a whole, which we talked about, the fact that, Eric Berry's listed as first team, and then the other six players that they took in this past year's draft, which they've talked very highly about, the other six players are all listed second team at their roster spot. I mean, they are not kidding around when they say they're serious about liking this draft class, because in the past, they've wanted those young guys to prove themselves and give them a little bit of incentive, dangling that carrot out there. And here they are all, they're not starting, but they're all on that second team, I think is a great statement about how they do feel about this draft. What about the middle linebacker spot? It continues to list Mays. And again, I'll point out, the head coach has said, do not read too much into this. Bernard Pollard was running with the first team the whole way and then ended up being cut before the season started. So these are certainly not set in stone. We'll reiterate that again. But Corey Mays and DeMario Williams listed as the starting middle linebackers, Belcher and Derek Johnson behind them. And the coach saying the other day that Johnson and DeMario Williams, one of the best battles in camp. You got a gut feeling on how this middle linebacker, the two middle linebacker spots end up shaping up?
Well, it's interesting. They're obviously not sold on everything from one person, because I mean, you almost, when it comes down to third down or your nickel situations, you bring a bus to change the substitutes. I mean, they have a lot of different people, so they like what somebody does in a certain situation and what somebody else does somewhere else. You would think, and again, this is just going on the fact of how he performed at the end of last year and being a former number one pick and having some big playability, that Derek would have a chance to reclaim that inside backer spot. I think a lot of people probably surprised them that maybe he's not the Mike backer though. So I don't know. I think he does perform better from the weak side where he's at. It's interesting, in hearing Derek talk, he talks like he's brought a new attitude and he's very comfortable with things and is doing the right things. And I think the coaches have talked about that as well to a degree. So that's hard to tell. I've got to see the preseason game as well to see how they change some things out. And I know, I understand that's a cop out, but it to me it is a little bit confusing.
No, I'm with you.
And there's, you know, there's some things we just don't know, but and this is one of them. But it is a little bit confusing to me.
I think it's what we expected it to say. I don't think that they were just going to take those two out of their starting spot. I mean,
agreed.
I would have been surprised if it had said something else. It would have been a statement that, man, Belcher is just flat out outplaying the other linebackers, or Johnson is flat out outplaying the linebackers. I think it is possible that either one of those guys is actually moved ahead in the mindset, but I think it's going to take a dominant performance and maybe dominant performances in the preseason, like you said, for them to ultimately end up being listed and win that spot. I'm with you wholeheartedly on that one. The other one that's a tough one to make out, I think the corners fall the way we expected. Flowers and Carr, I know Carr's had a tough camp at times, but again, you expect those two guys to have it. Arenas has had his problems as well. Leggett, they're the second teamers. I think that's how you expected it to go. And we'll see if somebody doesn't, if an Arenas or somebody else can battle their way past Brandon Carr. But I think that's what we expected to see. But the safeties, Eric Berry and John McGraw, we've heard a lot about Kendrick Lewis, and he has played well, but he's on the second team. Now, that doesn't shock me much that the veteran, again, McGraw, is listed in front of him. But what I think might surprise some people is that Rashard Langford is the other second team safety, and I think that speaks very highly of what they've seen out of him. Your third teams are DeJuan Morgan and Donald Washington. And I think this is the toughest one to figure out, because Washington makes the move over from corner to safety, which they did a lot in New England. If you go back to when Pioli and Purnell were working together there, whether it was Eugene Wilson in the second round from Illinois, they immediately took him from corner to safety. They did that with their safeties opposite Rodney Harrison a lot. So they like good coverage skills out of their safety. So I'm not shocked that he's made his way over there. But I don't know that this one, other than Eric Berry being the starter, I think that makes a great statement about the confidence they've gotten him. After that, I don't know that you couldn't take the other five, throw them up in a, you know, put them in a hat, throw it up in the air, and wherever it lands, be accurate on how that's being portrayed.
Well, I agree with you, and I would think that Lewis has a great chance, quite honestly, to jump in where McGraw's at. It, you know, depends on how the preseason goes. And quite honestly, I think, given the druthers, I think they'd probably prefer that. And I think John's still here as a great special teams player and can still come in and do some things. The guy, to me, has a lot of value. And you just talked about it, but this is the one that jumped out of me completely, was the fact that DeJuan and Donald were back there. And then again, you've got, a rookie this year who's in front of both of them. So, I don't know. If you're those two guys, you better be doing something in the preseason games to get noticed, because otherwise I don't think you're going to be there. I mean, you're on the outside looking in my opinion.
We're talking with Kendall Gammon here in the Red Zone. Kendall, final four time, four quickies. Are you ready?
I always love it.
Well, good. I appreciate that. Let's see. We will or won't have a work stoppage before next season?
I'm going to say, while I think there's a good chance we could, I'm going to say won't. I'm going to say brighter minds prevail, that you've got to get something settled, because it's not in the best interest of anybody if there's any type of work stoppage, be it a lockout or a strike, which
okay,
it would be a lockout.
Okay, who leads the Chiefs in TD catches?
Who leads the key? McCluster.
Wow. Okay. You definitely like what you've seen out of him.
I do. He's on. I've chased some guys that run on a different level, and have a different level of quickness. And he's definitely one of those guys.
You know, I specifically didn't ask you about him because I'm worried about, there's so much conversation about him that he's going to become that, you know, raise the expectation level where people expect him to catch for 1,200, rush for 700, return for 2,000, and score 22 touchdowns. I think he's going to be outstanding, too. I think he's going to be fighting for the Offensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL. But I am nervous about putting all those expectations on the kid. But he is exciting. There's no doubt about it. All right, who makes a bigger impact, Weiss or Cornell?
Cornell. Only because you want me to pick somebody, and I've got no explanation for either.
I'll give you one. He's got more room to improve based off their rankings last year.
That's an easy one.
That's an easy way to be politically correct, but still take a side. You know, I'll give you that one, because I think he's got a chance. I think they've got to make some improvements at some point. They've invested too much in personnel on the defensive side of the ball. They better take a step forward this year. And finally, right now, what's your feeling? We won't hold you to this, but now watching a couple of weeks of practice, what's your feeling on what this team's record is going to be?
They will be, to me, they can be anywhere between 7-9 and 9-7. It all depends on whether some plays are made, and that it's a bit of a cop out. But on that note, I'll say 9-7.
9-7. All right, very good. I like that. I like that. I'm with you right now. I like what I'm seeing, and I'm right in that ballpark as well. So let's see. I think that'll be a good way to approach the season if the schedule plays down and injuries go your way. 9-7 right. Can become 10-6 or 11-5. If everything goes against you, it could be 7-9. But I definitely think we're seeing progress on the field. That's the important part of the equation. Kendall, we always make progress when we talk to you. I appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Soren, much appreciation. Thanks.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Jamal Charles!
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game! And the Chiefs put the hammer down!
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime!
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to KCChiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweet punch to the fullback. And a great block springs over the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. We're going to talk some running back action right now with Tim Castillo. He joins us right now in the Red Zone. Tim, how are you, sir?
Doing great. Doing great, about to head to this first practice.
All right, is today indoors?
No, it is not.
Okay,
so, we'll be out on the field this morning to see how. Hope it doesn't heat up too fast.
Yeah, should be not too bad in the morning. I called you running back because I don't know what to call you: fullback, tailback, halfback, running back. You kind of did it all last year. What do you think of yourself as?
I think of myself as a fullback right now. That's really the position they want me to play, and I think that I can play a little back. I have done in the past. So right now, what I have to focus on is being a great fullback, and the rest of it will come.
Now, the press release the Chiefs put out had you as the first-team fullback. Now, the head coach has made a point to say, don't read too much into that. That's just something we have to put out, so we put something out there. But is that something you pay attention to, that you look at, that you're listed there as the first-team fullback?
No, not really, because me and Mike are really sharing time battling this thing out. Right now, I just got my head down, and I'm working. And when the season gets here, if they still have me listed there and I'm starting, then that'll be one of my goals that I've accomplished.
How different is it to go from being a guy carrying the ball to a guy that's focusing in on the blocking?
It is very different. It's a different mentality. You have to be a little on the crazy side to go hit linebackers. And so it's a different mentality. You just have to and I think it's a lot of technique to it, too, to blocking and being able to do it well. But with the guys that I'm blocking for, they make my job really easy.
Now, I know talking to Tony Richardson, who's been one of the great fullbacks in the history of this league and played great fullback for the Kansas City Chiefs for a lot of years before moving on to the Vikings and the Jets. And one of the things he told me that I thought was you know, something I'd never really thought about was that you got to have great vision just like a running back. Even though you don't have the ball, you got to have that running back vision so that you know which guy to pick up. You know, there are multiple guys that you might have a chance to block, but you've got to make sure you've got the vision to take out the guy that's the first threat to that running back. Do you agree with that? That vision that you use as a ball carrier makes you a better blocker?
Absolutely. When things are flying, every play doesn't develop like you draw it up. And so when you're in a two-back offense, the fullbacks really can end up being the savior on a lot of plays just because he's kind of the last line of defense. You want to keep your tailback from having negative plays. So if the play breaks down, you want to be able to get him back to the line of scrimmage, but you have to be able to see everything just like he does so you can lead him to the right holes and to the right places.
Is it as entertaining, is it as fun to play fullback as it is to have the ball in your hands?
It's different.
It's different.
I'm not going to say it's not as entertaining because you get it's a lot more contact. So when you like contact, it's really not that bad. And when you want to see the guys behind you succeed, then it makes it a lot of fun. If you're playing as a team, it makes it a lot of fun. If there's division, if I don't like the tailback or something like that, then it wouldn't be as fun as it is. But with the guys that we have here, I love it. I mean, I love seeing Jamal go for 1,000 yards in 8 games. I mean, when he did that, it was just like me running the ball.
Now, when you said, you know, if you're a guy that likes contact, it's a good spot. Do you like contact?
I have to.
Yeah.
I don't have a choice. I've grown to enjoy it. I can say when I first moved to fullback, when I got to college, it was not fun for me. I didn't like getting hit. But I think that over the past, man, I've been playing fullback for almost 8 years now, you learn to enjoy it. And it's not even just fullback. With me, I'm playing a lot of special teams, and those are hidden positions, making tackles. I love making tackles. And so I think that I've grown to enjoy it.
Now, you tell me, I think I got this right. Your father is Jeremiah Castillo, right?
Yes, sir.
And what was it like growing up in an NFL family? Was this what you were destined to do, was playing the National Football League?
I wouldn't say I was destined. I think it took a lot of hard work, but my dad definitely, me seeing him growing up playing football definitely made me want to do it, and seeing how successful he was. And growing up in Alabama, and he's a legend in Alabama, and seeing how much everybody loved him, and he played there 25 years ago. I loved it. My brother's playing in the UFL right now. I got another little brother that's playing at Alabama right now. And so it just runs in our blood.
I mean, I would think, you know, a lot of kids dream of playing in the NFL. I would think for you it wasn't a dream. It was more of an expectation.
I think so. I think that it was an expectation of something that I believe that I could do. You hear about the percentages of who makes it and who doesn't, but that it was a dream of mine. It was a goal that I set and that I wanted to accomplish, and it ended up, with a lot of hard work, it ended up coming true.
We're talking, by the way, with Tim Castile, fullback for the Kansas City Chiefs. You mentioned you playing at Alabama, your father playing at Alabama, a couple of brothers playing at Alabama. I would think that that was an expectation, that you would play at Alabama. There was never a thought of Auburn, was there?
Oh, no, not Auburn. I might have thought about going to a couple of other places, but can't do that orange.
Yeah, I would think not. What were some of the other schools? I mean, when you've got a father that played in front of you at Alabama, I'm sure that was a strong pull towards the Crimson Tide. But who else kind of caught your eye and that you were considering?
I was really thinking about Notre Dame and LSU. Coach Saban was at LSU, and Ty Willingham was at Notre Dame. And those were probably the other two schools that I thought about the most. But Alabama's right there in my backyard. Grew up loving them. And so it would have been tough to not make that decision to go there.
You mentioned Coach Saban. What was it like when he came to Alabama, being a guy that you'd competed against, now taking over your school? But I would think the fact that he's been such a great coach made it pretty easy for you to welcome him into the Crimson Tide family.
Well, I knew he was a great coach. And when you're at your alma mater, we had been down, and even when I was there, we weren't very good. And so we were kind of looking for somebody to turn the program around. And when they got him, I mean, it was just he had done it at LSU and won the national championship there when I was in college. And so I was really happy when they ended up getting him.
Now, when you come out of college, you're not drafted, and you end up signing with the Arizona Cardinals. Fullback is not a spot that they dig deep down into the draft to draft a lot of times. Did that frustrate you? Did it disappoint you, or did it just motivate you to work harder?
Well, I kind of knew going into it that I probably wasn't going to be drafted. I played behind LaRon McClain in college, and he ended up being, I think, the highest fullback drafted. And so I didn't expect that, but I knew that I was a hard worker, and that kind of what they're looking for when you have a free agent guy coming in is a guy that's going to work hard and try to push to make the team and do everything he can to make the team. And that's really the kind of guy I am. Is I know that my talents are limited, but where I make up for it is with hard work.
Now, you obviously clicked there in Arizona with Todd Haley, as that ended up being your first stop, and then he thought enough of you to bring you here to Kansas City. What is it that you think you click with Todd Haley so well?
Just like I said, I think that he appreciates the work that I put in every day. I'm going to be the same guy. I'm going to be consistent. I'm not going to be up and down. I think that consistency and the hard work that I put in, I think it really resonates with them.
Yeah, and that's one of the things they've preached. Character, hard work, guys that love football. You're clearly one of those guys. We're talking to Tim Castile, Chiefs fullback here in the Red Zone. Tim, before I let you go, I got to give you my final four quickies, and we'll just take whatever pops into your head. How often do you get called, Jeremiah?
Rarely.
Rarely? Really? There aren't a lot of guys that maybe you don't hang around enough old guys like me that remember him, because I almost called you Jeremiah when I first started talking to you.
No, that is rare. It's very rare.
Okay. Does Alabama repeat as national champions?
Yes.
What's the toughest player you've ever had to block?
D'Amico Ryans.
D'Amico Ryans. Okay, that's good. That's good. I probably should have thought of that one. And finally, has Charlie Weiss let you drive his cart yet?
No.
No, no. Is that off limits? Has he made it clear that that is his cart and nobody else will be driving it?
We think about that.
Yeah. Very good. Hey, Tim, we really appreciate it. Thanks so much for the time, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you for having me.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
The off-season workouts are complete. Training camp is underway. The new Arrowhead Stadium is ready to make its Monday Night Football debut.
Are you ready for football? The NFL season is near. Will you be there? Great seats are available with tickets to Chiefs games starting at just $30. Single game Chiefs tickets are on sale now at kcchiefs.com, the stadium box office, or via Ticketmaster. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium and be there when your Chiefs take on the Packers, the Eagles, AFC West rivals the Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers, or the 49ers, Cardinals, Bills, Jags, or Titans. Great seats are available for all games, but won't last long and are subject to availability. Don't wait. Get your single game Chiefs tickets now at kcchiefs.com, the stadium box office, or any Ticketmaster location. The new Arrowhead, new body, same soul.
Hey Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of kcchiefs.com.
And I am the internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at kcchiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but kcchiefs.com is legit.
I know. At kcchiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback? That is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At kcchiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at kcchiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at kcchiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs Cheerleader Squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. Wrapping things up here in the Red Zone. Soren Petro with you. I want to thank my guests, Kendall Gammon and Tim Castile. Great conversation talking to Tim Castile from an NFL family. Tim Castile, good guy, and currently the first team fullback. So thank you to Kendall Gammon. Thank you to Tim Castile. Also want to thank our man Brad Young, as well as Curtis Siebelt and Adam Pellegrino. I want to say thank you very much for joining us here in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to the Red Zone with Soren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of kcchiefs.com.